This is Nightly Business Report with Tyler Matheson and Sue Herrera.
Finding value, it's not an easy thing to do in a market at record levels, but bargains do exist. We'll show you where.
Pain at the pump. Americans are hitting the road just as gas prices start rising. The question is, how high might they go?
Shrinking seats. It's not your imagination. Airline seats are getting smaller. Now a judge wants the FAA to reconsider its position. Those stories and more tonight on Nightly Business Report for Monday, July 31st.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome. A record way to start the week and end the month. The blue chip Dow Index powered to another all-time high, its eighth record close of July. Investors cheered strong quarterly results from corporate America, and that's widely considered to be the main driver of July's gains, which were the best since February. Today, the market was mixed. The Dow Jones Industrial Average advanced 60 points to 21,891. The NASDAQ fell 26, and the S&P 500, it was off just slightly. For the month, all of the major indexes were up. The NASDAQ was the big winner. Bob Pisani takes a look at what worked for investors and what didn't in July.
It was a good month overall. The S&P was up about 2%. It's up nearly 11% for the year. Tech's been the leader, and it was again in July. The demand for semiconductors to power cell phones and appliances just keeps going up. Oil also had a big rally, going from about $44 to nearly $50, but it didn't help a lot of oil stocks. ExxonMobil hit a 52-week low on Friday on disappointing earnings. Banks also were mostly down for the month. Now, they benefit when interest rates are higher, and traders have been surprised that rates have not been rising despite the improving economy. Inflation, for example, remains below the Federal Reserve's target levels. One major issue is transports are diverging from the rest of the market. The Dow Industrials are up almost 3% for the month. Transports are down 4%. It's not one sector. It's right across the board. Airlines and railroads and truckers all down. Meantime, money continues to flow into stocks. Investors are increasingly using ETFs to get in and out of the market. July saw $23 billion in inflows, slightly lower level than the first 6 months of the year, but still on pace for a record year of inflows, second straight years. Investors are continuing to pour money into international funds, which have been strong, and bond funds, particularly high yield funds, as investors continue that hunt for yield. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Bob Pisani at the New York Stock Exchange.
When stocks move up day after day, month after month, bargains, of course, become fewer and farther between. But our next guest has some ideas on where to find them. Hank Smith is Chief Investment Officer at Haverford Investment. Hank, welcome. Good to see you. How much tougher is it to find bargains today than it was, say, a year, 3 years ago?
Well, there's no question it's definitely a little bit tougher, but I'd like to challenge the premise that the market is overvalued just because we're making new all-time highs. This market move since the election is right in line with earnings growth, so there really hasn't been that much change in valuation. We're looking at a market at about 18 times forward earnings, above the historical norm of about 15 times forward earnings, but right in line given the low levels of inflation and the low levels of interest rates. So I would characterize the market as fairly valued today.
And also, there aren't all that many other alternatives to equities at this point for a return on your money.
Right. The acronym, it's a TINA market. There is no alternative, is very apropos here.
Whether the market on average is overvalued or undervalued, and as you say, it's 18 times forward earnings, which is 20% above the historical norm, there are pockets where the market is much more highly valued than that, certainly, we'd have to agree. And then others where some of the stocks have been left behind. Tell me about where some of the ones that are decidedly undervalued reside and what you have to be willing to accept if that's where you want to put your money.
Yes, but first let me just point out, we don't have the egregious valuations that we did in the late 90s. Yeah, we do have some areas that are above that average, but nothing like the late 90s where you had 75, 100, 125 times earnings. But today, we think you're getting value in the pharmaceutical stocks that are selling a below market, many of them at a below market PE with above average yields and growth of dividends.
Big Pharma?
And then the bank.
Big Pharma. The ones we know. Johnson & Johnson, Merck,
right.
Pfizer, whatever.
Merck, Pfizer, Bristol Myers, yes. The names we all know. And I think you're getting a good valuation. You're getting an excellent yield, a better than bond yield with dividend growth there. We also think you have value in the banking sector. Look, you have several tailwinds. Interest rates are trending very slowly higher, but they are trending higher. You have the potential for less regulation. That's a huge plus. Mm-hmm. And you have a global economy that's doing very well as compared to several years ago. So that all plays in well for the banks.
You know, you also point out in the notes that I have here that energy has been out of favor. It's had a decent run recently, but you have three energy holdings that you think still provide good value.
Yes, and in this space, we think it's very important to stick with quality, and we own the three highest quality names there are, Chevron, ExxonMobil, and Schlumberger, and you're getting paid to wait with above-average dividends there, and companies that continue to grow their dividend despite a very challenging macro environment.
All right, Hank, thanks very much. We appreciate it. Hank Smith with Haverford Investments.
Good to be with you.
Well, content is king, and that's one of the reasons why Discovery Communications is buying Scripps Network Interactive. That deal, which we told you was a possibility, sent shares of Discovery lower and Scripps higher. The combined company would command nearly 20% of cable viewership in the U.S. and comes as the television industry faces numerous challenges and changes. Julia Boorstin has the details.
The Discovery Channel, Animal Planet, and TLC are teaming up with the Food Network, HGTV, and the DIY Network, as Discovery Communications is buying Scripps Networks Interactive, paying 70% cash and 30% stock for a deal valued at $14.6 billion, including debt. The two companies are similar in that both of their channels have a truly dedicated fan base.
It's not about getting the biggest audience. It's about getting an audience that you can nourish that really loves you. And nobody's done that better than Scripps with Home and Garden and Food. And you put that together with us, we have 20% of the viewership in the U.S., and we have a huge amount of women that we could take to the market. But more importantly, we have most of the quality brands on cable.
The combined company will have five of the top cable networks for women, giving it more leverage when it comes to negotiating fees from cable and satellite TV companies, and as Discovery pushes for its channels to be included in new skinny bundles.
This merger comes as TV ratings and ad revenue decline, as cable and satellite TV suffer from cord cutting, with streaming on the rise, putting pressure on Scripps and Discovery. Both companies' earnings reports fell short of Wall Street expectations.
The combined company plans to accelerate growth of digital and short-form video, looking to profit from a loyal audience, even discussing the potential of launching a new direct-to-consumer subscription service.
Our company's continued to grow. We've expanded internationally. We also, very much like Discovery, have pivoted from just a linear television company to more of a digital content origination company. And now just seemed like the right time. And I have to say, it's a historic day for our stakeholders, the Scripps family, our public investors.
The deal requires regulators and shareholders to sign off, but it's expected to close by early next year. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Julia Boorstin in Los Angeles.
Meantime, the cable television company Charter Communications says it's not interested in the prospect of a merger with Sprint. The comments come despite interest by Sprint's parent, SoftBank, to create a giant new telecom company in the U.S. Charter is one of the nation's largest internet and pay TV providers. According to the Wall Street Journal, SoftBank's chairman may still decide to make a formal offer to acquire Charter anyway. Shares of Charter and Sprint moved in opposite directions.
PIMCO has staged a comeback and is now the world's best-selling active mutual fund manager. According to the Financial Times, PIMCO attracted almost $50 billion to its funds in the 6 months ending in June. Just a few years ago, investors pulled billions of dollars following the departure of Bill Gross, who is known among investors as the Bond King.
The vice chair of the Federal Reserve said political and economic uncertainty has contributed to slow global growth, and that's part of the reason why interest rates are low, both here and overseas. Stanley Fischer said the phenomenon is being driven by a number of factors, including an aging population and weak levels of investment.
In Washington, President Trump's top economic advisor says the White House is committed to overhauling the tax code before the end of the year. Director of the National Economic Council, Gary Cohn, said the number one topic at today's cabinet meeting was tax reform. He added that the administration and Republican congressional leaders are in agreement on that topic. But then later in the day, Republican Senator Orrin Hatch, the Senate's top tax law writer, told Reuters that reducing the corporate income tax rate to 25% from 35% will be a challenge, let alone getting it to the 15% rate advocated by the president.
And another big change at the White House today. Anthony Scaramucci is out as communications director. He held the job 10 days. Scaramucci, a former New York hedge fund impresario, apparently ran afoul of the president and his new staff chief, General John Kelly, over a foul-mouthed tirade against members of the president's inner circle. Multiple sources say the dismissal came at Kelly's request. The White House said Scaramucci felt it was best to give Kelly, sworn in today, a, quote, clean slate.
Still ahead, cramped and crowded, why a judge is saying enough is enough when it comes to shrinking airline seats. So much for OPEC's production cuts. According to Reuters, the cartel's oil output has risen to a 2017 high. OPEC and non-OPEC producers will meet in Abu Dhabi next week to discuss why some nations aren't fully complying with their commitment to cut output. Despite the increase in supply, the price of domestic crude surpassed $50 a barrel. The commodity climbed 8% last week.
And that rise in the price of oil is being felt by drivers at the gas pump. But for how long? Jackie DeAngelis takes a look.
Have you noticed something at the pump? It's getting more expensive to fill up. Over the last month, oil prices have climbed a little more than 7%, and today crossed $50 a barrel for the first time in 2 months. Most of that run-up coming because of evidence of summer driving demand kicking in later in the summer. The average price of a gallon of gas is following crude prices higher, now $2.32. And AAA says it could go even higher than that.
We've seen prices rise about 5 cents in a little over a week and a half. And we anticipate that prices will go up another 5 cents by the time we hit Labor Day. This is really for drivers. It's kind of an end to a very lovely summer where we were seeing low gas prices moving into July. Obviously, those dropping summer gas prices, those days are over.
The rise in prices has been swift and sharp. It wasn't long ago that we were talking about lower gas prices this summer. Kind of like
Christmas in July.
But the focus has shifted, and now some experts say it's possible that prices will surpass their peak this year of $2.42 a gallon, and they could do it rather quickly. The funny thing with fuel is when crude falls, gas prices take their time to move down. But when crude prices spike, the hikes come very quickly.
There's a number of factors in the summer that actually cause gas prices to spur up that aren't directly connected with crude prices. We also are looking at higher demand this summer. We also are looking at U.S. production levels, as well as where refiners are in terms of their runs. And so there's a lot of other factors playing into the price at the pump, not only the price of crude.
But will more expensive gas be a higher trend for the rest of the year? It depends. Driving demand drops in the fall and prices usually move lower. But rising tensions in Venezuela could keep the underlying price of crude elevated, which would translate at the pump as well. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Jackie DeAngelis.
Tesla and General Motors are charging up the electric car market. This week, the Chevy Bolt goes on sale nationwide. And over the weekend, Tesla delivered the first Model 3s. Phil LeBeau has more on the two new electric vehicles trying to make car makers and buyers rethink what it means to go green.
Tesla has finally rolled out its Model 3. In front of a throng of Tesla employees at its plant outside San Francisco, CEO Elon Musk delivered the first 30 Model 3s.
We're going to work day and night to do right by the loyalty that you've shown us. Thank you for doing that.
Now that Tesla has delivered the first 30 Model 3s, the real challenge comes, producing a 500,000 vehicles next year. As Tesla ramps up its production, it's racing to not only fill reservations for the Model 3, but also win over car buyers who traditionally look at a Mercedes C-Class or a BMW 3 Series.
Tesla definitely can compete with Mercedes-Benz and BMW because it does have, you know, that elevated image. It doesn't necessarily have the product lineup that a Mercedes or a BMW has, but in terms of people wanting to pay a little bit more, you know, I think it could definitely capture more of those type of customers that are willing to pay extra to drive a car that represents how they feel about life.
Meanwhile, GM is also expanding its electric car sales, making the all-electric Chevy Bolt available nationwide. Until now, sales were limited to a few states like California and Oregon. Like the Model 3, the Bolt will start in the mid-$30,000 range. This is the start of several automakers pushing newer electric vehicles, many at lower prices, but with greater range, some promising over 200 or 300 miles when fully charged. The goal? Convince Americans they can go electric and still go wherever they want, whenever they want. Phil LeBeau, Nightly Business Report, Fremont, California.
Boeing is creating a new unit to develop aircraft electrical systems. The move could pit the plane makers against suppliers like Honeywell and Rockwell Collins. The unit, called Boeing Avionics, will focus on aircraft navigation, flight controls, and other core technologies. The world's largest plane makers said the goal is to lower costs, increase quality, and deliver more services and revenue to the company. Shares of Boeing rose in trading today.
A federal judge is ordering the FAA to review seat sizes and legroom on commercial airlines. The advocacy group Flyers Rights pushed for new rules regulating seat sizes, saying smaller seats are a health risk and that the average size of the airplane seat itself has shrunk along with the spacing between them. So how might this might impact the airline industry itself? James Broccoli is aviation expert and attorney at Motley Rice Law Firm and joins us now to talk more about that. Welcome. Nice to have you here, Jim. What's your reaction?
Good evening. Thank you for having me.
What's your reaction overall? It seems like it might be good for passengers, certainly, if indeed we get bigger seats and better spacing. But what about for the airlines?
Obviously, for the passenger, it would be a much more comfortable ride. If you look at the court order, the court was focused on the safety aspect of passengers being able to egress the airplane. The overall impact on the airlines is probably not that much. I would imagine that the airlines, they're trying to decrease the seat size to put more passengers to increase revenue. I would imagine they'll keep that revenue target the same, and if they do have to increase the seat size, they'll just end up paying more for a ticket.
So this was a judge who ordered the FAA to take a look at seat size as it impacts on safety and how quickly people can get off a plane. We're a long way away, aren't we, James, from a point at which anybody orders airlines to change the size or the pitch, which is the difference between where a seat ends and the next one begins on an airplane, right?
We are. The order specifically, as you mentioned in the introduction, the group Flyers Rights petitioned the FAA to change or stop the airlines from shrinking the seats. And the court, the FAA denied the Flyers' request and based it, well, what they said were some studies, but they didn't produce any studies or any evidence to the court. And the court said, you need to look at this and you need to produce something that says that it does not affect the egress.
Let's say the FAA does take a look at this and decide that they need to change or set certain standards for rules. Does Congress become involved or not?
Congress certainly can come involved. The FAA works on based on Congress's rules. There is a current standard right now that aircraft that seat more than 44 passengers has to be able to have everyone out in 90 seconds or less. So that's something that I think the FAA really needs to investigate with these shrinking seats.
Right. Jim, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Jim Broccoli with
Motley
Rice.
Me.
All right, Pandora's results are music to investors' ears, and that's where we begin tonight's Market Focus. After the bell, the music streaming company posted a narrower-than-expected loss in the latest quarter. Sales grew more than estimates, helped by growth in advertising and subscriptions. Pandora shares initially popped on the news. They did, however, end the regular session down more than 5% to $8.95. And Dynavax's experimental Hep B treatment gets another shot. A panel of expert advisors to the FDA recommended to approve the biotech company's medication after determining that data supported the safety of the drug. The treatment, which has already been rejected twice, will be considered for approval soon. Shares rocketed, and how? 71%, you heard me right, to $15.85. And the utility owner Scana said it would abandon plans to finish construction on two nuclear reactors in South Carolina. The company cited rising costs and uncertainty over tax credits. Scana and its partner, the South Carolina Public Service Authority, had already spent close to $8 billion on the plants. Scana shares were higher by 5% to $64.37.
Ceiling and wall maker Armstrong World said lower costs helped that company's sales grow at a faster clip than analysts were expecting. Profit also rose. The company also lifted its full-year outlook for sales and earnings. Shares jumped 9% to $48.55. Restructuring costs and pricing pressure in the U.S. cut into earnings at the drug maker Sanofi. The results were still in line with estimates, but the company's overall revenue was slightly below street targets. Still, the company raised its forecast for 2017, saying it expects broadly stable earnings. Shares fell just a fraction to $47.36. And analysts at Pivotal Research Group downgraded Facebook stock from hold to sell, warning that investors are not considering the risks to growth. The firm said Facebook is facing a saturated digital ad sector and issues with ad viewability on its platform. Shares of Facebook fell nearly 2% to $169.25.
Coming up, should the White House declare a federal state of emergency to address the opioid epidemic?
Here's a look at what to watch tomorrow. Apple reports earnings tomorrow. Investors will be looking to see if consumers held off buying iPhones in anticipation of the new model, which is expected to be released. The major automakers will report their sales figures for July. The question is what role incentives played in those results. And John Flannery takes over the helm at General Electric. And that's what to watch on Tuesday.
Los Angeles has reached a deal to host the 2028 Olympic Games. L.A.'s bid committee estimates it'll cost more than $5 billion to stage the Games. It says it can cover all expenses through revenue from sponsorship and ticket sales. The city also hosted the Games in 1984 and 32. The move paves the way for Paris to host the 2024 Games.
A sugary drink tax will take effect in Chicago on Wednesday. This after a judge dismissed a lawsuit by retailers that challenged the measure as unconstitutional. Consumers in Cook County, which is home to Chicago, will be charged a penny per ounce for both sugar and artificially sweetened beverages. An attorney for the Retailers Association said the plaintiffs are considering an appeal.
The opioid epidemic has struck dozens of states, and tonight a new report from the White House's Opioid Commission recommends that the president declare a state of emergency. Elon Mui is covering the story for us from Washington. Elon, what are some of the details of the report, and what would a state of emergency mean?
Well, it would mean that Congress would have additional pressure on it to provide funding for opioid addiction treatment. It would also elevate this issue in the public eyes. So the commission pointed out that there are 142 Americans dying every day from opioid addiction. That's the equivalent of a September 11th happening every 3 weeks. So this report that came out from the commission today used some very strong language to drive home this idea that this is something that is happening not just in places like Ohio, but across the country on a massive scale. Some of the other recommendations in this report included making sure that more money is going toward treatment and that insurers are getting reimbursed for those treatments as well. It's also requiring that law enforcement carry the drug naloxone, which is used to reverse people who have overdosed from opioids or from fentanyl, which is a substitute for an opioid.
Right.
So that is also something that is being recommended currently.
So the report is out, strong language. What are some of the next steps here?
Well, the next thing to do is to finalize this report. This was just a draft report that was issued by the Opioid Commission. It's a bipartisan commission that is chaired by New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. The final report from this commission will come out in the fall, and then it'll be up to the White House and up to Congress to actually implement some of those ideas. The White House is saying that it plans to do that in 2018.
There's also controversy around the pricing of that naloxone, the overdose reversal drug. Was that addressed in the report?
They didn't talk specifically about how much this cost, but the idea that law enforcement around the country should carry it is one that has been controversial, partly because this drug has gotten way more expensive in a very short period of time because of some of the high demand we've seen for it. There's also some people who feel that, you know, if law enforcement have this drug on hand, that actually might encourage or enable some people to be exceptionally risky with this drug, knowing that they have a way to save themselves.
All right. Elon, thank you very much. Elon Mui in Washington tonight.
And that is Nightly Business Report for tonight. I'm Sue Herrera. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks from me as well. I'm Tyler Matheson. Have a great evening, everybody. We'll see you back here tomorrow night.